This is Alton Banks from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe that every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as a person it represents. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, we look inside this week's Triangle Business Journal and we find the biz page as usual. And the heading on this is Connecting. And the article is entitled French Ambassador to Make House Call in Raleigh Soon. Very quietly, the Research Triangle Regional Partnership has invited some 20 folks from the Triangle area to a private reception for the French ambassador to the United States, Philippe Etienne, at Raleigh executive Jeff Stock's house on February 20. I agreed to host this for economic development reasons, Stock says. I think the business community should be involved in the front end of each visit, because it allows us to showcase our region as being business-friendly. He did not offer any additional details on the invite list. Etienne's visiting Atlanta and Nashville, Tennessee, before coming to Raleigh. Numbers from the Consulate General of France say France and North Carolina exchange some $4 billion in goods each year, and North Carolina is home to more than 2,000 French people. This will be Etienne's first trip to North Carolina. He was appointed ambassador last summer. Meanwhile, Biz keeps looking at the mailbox for that invitation. And under the heading of Listed comes the article, Raleigh Ranked High for Female Entrepreneurs. Another day, another report ranking Raleigh ahead of Charlotte. Magnify Money researchers analyzed the 50 largest U.S. cities and scored them in four categories relating to income, business earnings, rate of incorporation, and entrepreneurial parity between women and men. The report found San Francisco to be the best market for female entrepreneurs, followed by San Jose, California. Raleigh came in an impressive fifth overall, putting it ahead of Los Angeles, who was sixth, Seattle, seventh, and Boston, ninth. Charlotte, by the way, ranked 43rd. And under the heading of Key Funder comes the article, Wintertail Gala Raises Big Dollars to Support At-Risk Youth. One of the Triangle's signature galas was a big hit recently when the Methodist Home for Children held its annual Winter's Tale at the Raleigh Convention Center. The event's a key fundraiser for an organization that dates to the founding of the Methodist Orphanage in Raleigh in 1899. The name changed in 1955. This year's Winter's Tale, a black tie optional event, welcomed 612 guests, raised $375,000 to support programs that help at-risk youth. And if you missed it, then there's always next year. Mark it on your calendar, January the 30th, 2021. And under the heading of Yum, there's this very short article entitled, Apex High School Wins Big Culinary Honor. Congratulations are in order for the student culinary team from Apex High School, which won first place for the second year running in the 2020 North Carolina Junior Chef Competition. The recent event was at Johnson & Wales University in Charlotte. The Apex team of Sydney Brock, Damari Person, and Molly Todd won for their banh mi with turkey meatballs and slaw. And under the heading of Restoration comes the article, Historic Apex House to Find New Life as Wedding Venue. A historic Apex House has a new owner who plans to transform it into a wedding and event venue. In January, local photographer Kara Powell paid $460,000 for the Upchurch Williams House. Powell has spent the last 16 years growing her photography basis of business. I started looking at the property, and it was one of those things I kept going back to over and over again, she says. Powell plans to spend around $960,000 on the project, including $460,000 on renovating the house and $500,000 on a second building. The house, built in 1905, served as a home for family members until 2014. The owner of the house and the property was having issues with vagrants, and it was becoming a liability, Powell says. The owner eventually donated the property to Capital Area Preservation. Knowing the industry, there's definitely a lot of venues, but there's not enough to be able to host the number of events that are happening in the Triangle, just because our city has doubled in the last 10 years, and it's likely to double again in the next 10 years, she said. As a photographer, I'm completely booked for 2020, and it's just February. And for the last article on this week's biz page, under the heading of sports venue, comes the article, Briar Creek Project Adds More Pickleball, Seeks Public Help. An effort to put a major tennis facility in Raleigh's Briar Creek has grown in scope and added more courts for the fast-growing sport of pickleball. The project, led by Rob Autry and partner Jason DeGroff, will now include 34 tennis courts and 29 pickleball courts, in addition to expanded facilities with a 30,000-square-foot fitness facility and a 10,000-square-foot gymnasium. The project had earlier called for 51 tennis courts and a significantly smaller number of pickleball courts. But Autry said the explosive growth of pickleball, that's a paddle sport played with a wiffle ball, drove the shift, especially as pickleball reels in a younger demographic. To reflect the switch, the project is now called Swing Racket Plus Paddle. The more research we did, the sheer number of pickleball players is just impressive, he said. And Autry and DeGroff noted that with 34 tennis courts, including one that could seat up to 3,000 spectators, the facility could still team with the Cary Tennis Center that has 32 courts, and Raleigh's Millbrook Exchange Park with 23 courts, and have plenty of courts for major U.S. Tennis Association events and even NCAA events. USTA league play has been booming, and towns such as Asheville, Wilmington, Winston-Salem, and Durham have added to their tourist base by attracting USTA state and regional championships, and those events are played at multiple facilities. The goal for Swing is to have up to 6,000 members, with the facilities also available to the public. So a non-member, for example, could go online, register for a tennis court, and then pay a fee. The group has a 50-year lease from the city for the 48 acres. Autry originally expected the project to cost $25 million, but now says the total build-out will be between $65 and $70 million. He said the group will apply for support from Wake County Interlocal Agreement Funds, which come from hotel and food taxes. It's become a much broader economic engine, Autry says. The goal is to begin construction this year and open in early 2022. Well, wrapping up the biz page, we turn the page to the On Tech, Startups, and Transportation articles for this week's Triangle Business Journal. Under the heading of e-commerce, we find the article, How Spoonflower's new chief hopes to grow the company. A veteran of e-commerce brands is taking on the top spot at a buzzy Durham company, custom fabric marketplace Spoonflower. Michael Jones is taking on the CEO role as company co-founder Gart Davis transitions into the COO role. Jones, who has held past leadership positions driving revenue at eBay and Channel Advisor, says he's ready to grow the homegrown company. The business is at this interesting inflection point where it started doing fabric by the yard, and now they've gotten into home goods, he says. How do you work on getting that to the next level and elevate the overall Spoonflower brand? I think there's a lot I bring to the table. Jones says the cash position is good for now. His next goal is to let the secret out. I think we're one of the best-kept secrets in e-commerce, he says. There's so many direct-to-consumer brands you hear a lot about, and I think we should be one of them. We need to scream it from the rooftops. And under the heading of Behind the Deal comes the article, Records Show Why Sara Lee Was a Big Win for the State. It was a sweet deal when North Carolina landed Project Paris, identified as Sara Lee Frozen Bakery, for a 100-job expansion. Last month, Governor Roy Cooper announced the producer of baked goods, which divested from Tyson Foods into a standalone company in 2018, would be investing $19.8 million in its manufacturing center in Edgecombe County. The move is expected to create 108 jobs. In exchange, the company was deemed eligible for a performance-based $500,000 One North Carolina Fund grant. Public records, a collection of emails, applications, and other documents released by the North Carolina Commerce Department at Triangle Business Journal's request show that, once again, those incentives would prove essential in securing the project for the win column. The project, according to an email from January the 6th, wouldn't just increase the production volume of croissants being turned out of the existing Edgecombe County facility, which pushes out 120 million pounds of frozen breads and desserts. It would also go towards securing a long-term contract for the existing croissant and biscuit volume for a customer. If Sara Lee Frozen Bakery does not win the contract, it would not only lose the opportunity for job expansion, it will have to immediately stop its hiring and could lose up to 40% of the site's total volume, resulting in significant headcount reductions. Mark Poole, a financial analyst with the Department of Commerce, wrote colleagues January 2nd. That customer was not named in documents, but the hope was that its endorsements could lead to even more wins for Sara Lee. And under the heading of growth comes the article, with more capacity comes price discipline, analyst says of RDU. So far in 2020, the new flights at Raleigh-Durham International Airport have been about frequency and capacity additions. While new service has been announced for both Boston through American Airlines and Miami through Delta, both routes were already served by multiple airlines. In Miami, American announced it was adding additional capacity. Analysts say it's a good trajectory for RDU. You're bringing competition to the market, so yes, it may be flights to the same markets, but with competition comes price discipline. And price is very important, says William Swolbar, chief industry strategist at Delta Airport Consultants. Mike Walden, an economist at NC State University, says RDU remains in a good spot for 2020, with strong area job growth expected to continue, he says. With this kind of past and future growth, carriers should want to serve the region with enhanced or new routes, Walden says. And finally, wrapping up the tech startup transportation page for this week's Triangle Business Journal, under the heading of New Job comes the article, SaaS sales chief lands role at Canadian firm. SaaS Institute's former chief sales officer has a new role. Nick Cleese, executive vice president and chief sales officer at the Carry Analytics giant since May of 2017, just took on a new role at Vizier Incorporated in Toronto. At Vizier, he'll serve as chief sales officer, directing companies' expansion into new markets, according to Vizier. On his LinkedIn page, Lisi says he's excited to join a passionate group of people that work my way at full throttle. At Vizier, a passion for analytics is combined with a belief in unlocking the potential of organizations and people, he writes. I'm joining a team that is about more than better technology. It's about better outcomes and helping people see the truth along the way. SAS has confirmed David McDonald has been its new chief sales officer since last year. Next, we turn the page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and we find the columns on real estate. Under the heading of Opportunity Zone comes the article, Developer Plots Project in Downtown Garner. Local developers bringing a mixed-use destination to Garner with plans to redevelop a pair of aging industrial buildings into a retail and office campus. Cary-based CityPlat has announced plans for the distillery at Rand Mill, an adaptive reuse development set to feature 13,000 square feet of mixed-use space in downtown Garner. The project is situated at 105 Rand Mill Road in an opportunity zone near the Garner Recreational Park. We spent a lot of time researching and learning the dynamics of the opportunity zone legislation. This project fits perfectly into the profile of what the legislation was intended for, says Vincenzo Verdino, principal at CityPlat. We are investing a significant amount of capital into this property with the intention of owning this project for over a decade. Opportunity zones were created through the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. They're meant to spur economic development by providing tax benefits to developers and investors. CityPlat paid around $1.2 million for the Garner property and is self-funding the project. And under the heading of Near Parkside Commons comes a short article called Hundreds of Smart Homes Headed for Cary Project. A national home builder is moving forward with plans for a large residential development near a popular shopping center in Cary. Blacksburg, Virginia-based H.H. Hunt has begun the design phase for Aberley Austin, a multifamily development featuring up to 330 apartments and 41 townhomes. The project is situated on 18.9 acres at 2132 Alston Avenue, just west of the Parkside Commons Shopping Center, near NC Highway 55 and Interstate 540. Lance Goss, H.H. Hunt Vice President of Apartment Living, says the company looked for a location in Cary for a while, ultimately landed on the final site more than a year ago. "We're very excited to be in this location," he says. "We're hoping to break ground January 2021. Goss says H.H. Hunt will have a better understanding of the pricing as it gets closer to the groundbreaking. The site is made up of 9 parcels owned by a collection of families and individuals in the area, and the Cary Town Council voted to rezone the property in last November. And under the heading of Downtown comes the article, Firm Plans Mixed-Use Project in Fuquay's Arena. A Triangle developer has plans to bring a new mixed-use development to Fuquay's Arena, with plans calling for 4 stories of apartments, retail, and office space. Local developer Bryden McCormick has filed plans for the McCormick mixed-use building in the heart of downtown. Set to feature 36,018 square feet of space, including ground floor retail, office space, and upper-level apartments. The project is situated on more than half an acre at 103 Raleigh Street. Fuquay's Arena Economic Development Director Jim Seymour said plans call for around 9,000 square feet of ground floor retail, around 9,200 square feet of office space on the second floor, and 16 multifamily units on the third and fourth floors. "It's currently under site plan review now," Seymour says. "I anticipate them breaking ground early summer, taking between 12 to 18 months to complete." He says the project is estimated to cost over $6 million and that it represents the type of development the growing town wants to encourage. Under the heading of Seeking Approval comes the article, Dallas Group Targets Chapel Hill for Large Development. A Dallas developer is making its first move into the Triangle with big plans for a mixed-use project in Chapel Hill. Trinsic Residential Group has filed plans for its premier project in the region, 500,000 square feet of mixed-use space, including 400 residential units, as well as retail and office space. The site is fundamentally unique to Chapel Hill, given the size of the tract and proximity to the university, We want to do something that is the proper scale. This is not the Blue Hill District, and we will not build a Blue Hill type of project here, says Ryan Stewart, managing director of the Carolinas for Trinzic. The Blue Hill District includes some of Chapel Hill's oldest suburban-style homes. Commercial space would feature retailers, though Trinzic does not plan to solicit grocery interest due to the potential traffic impact of grocery stores. Stewart says the development is not intended to serve as student housing and is instead targeting younger professionals. Concept plans also call for a single-story parking deck that would be almost fully hidden from view. Stewart says the development will most likely be up to four stories at the tallest points. The project is currently making its way through the approval process with the town. An initial public meeting has been held, and several more slated as the process moves along. Trinzic is a real estate development firm with mixed-use projects around the country. And finally, on this week's real estate page, under the heading of Glenwood South, comes the article, Raleigh Investor Buys Decades-Old Building. A longtime local real estate investor and builder has bought a decades-old building in the booming Glenwood South District in Raleigh, with plans to renovate and thoughts of potential future redevelopment. Raleigh-based Amtec Properties bought the Cavendish Building late last month for a little more than $3 million. The two-story brick building is situated on 0.43 acres at 719 Johnson Street and traces its history back to 1954. Amtec Properties also bought an adjoining vacant parcel. The firm is a sister company to Amtec Construction. Amtec President and CEO Ali Musavi says the company had been searching for a downtown acquisition opportunity when the building hit the market last fall. He says the company now plans to upgrade the property and is also considering for a future Amtec satellite office. I wanted to have something downtown, Musavi says. Maybe one day we'll go for development, but right now I'd like to remodel it. Musavi says they've already begun planning upgrades to modernize the aging retail and Class B office building. The building is fully leased with tenants such as Curve Makers, Rogers Word Service, Cyber Exchange, Honeycutt Consulting Group, and Feed Trail. Ravan Realty represented Amtec Properties in the purchase. Trademark Properties Vice President Sandra Simpson and Jonathan M. Bossi represented the server, West Johnson Group, LLC. We were in a multiple offer situation, and the buyer was fortunate to acquire a stabilized asset in an area with such high barriers to entry, says Simpson. Bossi noted the location's prominent position in the path of ongoing redevelopment in the city of Oaks. Next, we turn to the On Business page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and we find under this an article with the heading Surging, and it's titled Raleigh Second Among Southern Cities for Rent Growth. It's no secret that rents are rising in the Triangle, and a new report highlights just how fast the pace of growth is for Raleigh. The city of Oaks is among the nation's cities that saw the fastest rent growth during the previous decade, according to a report by Property Club. Median rent for housing in Raleigh increased 38% from 2010 to 2019. That figure is tied for 10th nationally with San Francisco, and is second most behind Orlando, Florida, for southern cities. The influx of tech-savvy, educated workers to some parts of the country, like San Francisco, Oakland, or Austin, has pushed rental rates there to all-time highs. Raleigh's median rent jumped nearly $350 a month, from $923 in 2010 to $1,272 in 2019. The city was slightly ahead of Charlotte, which saw a 36% increase from $974 to $1,320. Demand for housing has led to a boom of new apartment projects in the Triangle. The housing developments are routinely changing hands as investors build up their portfolios with local properties. And there's a little graphic with this article. It's entitled Closer Look, and it lists the top five U.S. cities in terms of rent growth during the previous decade. Here you go. Aurora, Colorado was 73%. Boise, Idaho, 53%. San Jose, California, 49%. Denver, 48%. And finally, Oakland, California, 46%. Next, we turn the page in this week's Triangle Business Journal, and we find a page entitled News. And the major article on this page appears under the heading Return on Investments. And the title is, For 900,000 North Carolinians, Here Are 2019's Returns. North Carolina's pension fund grew in 2019, but at a much slower rate than the S&P, Dow Jones Industrial Average, and the NASDAQ indices. Numbers received from the North Carolina State Treasurer's Office show the state's pension fund was valued at $105.6 billion at the end of 2019. That's a 14.88% jump from the year before. The Treasurer's Office noted that the numbers are reported net of all fees and expenses. While in most years the growth may look impressive, it pales in comparison to the performance of the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ trading systems last year. The S&P was up 28.9% in 2019. The Dow, up 22.3%. The NASDAQ had its best year in the past 6 years, posting a 35.3% return in 2019. In a February 10th note to Governor Roy Cooper and the General Assembly, Treasurer Dale Folwell noted that the pension fund is well-positioned to weather economic uncertainty. He wrote, The stress test performed by the Pew Charitable Trust of the state's pension plans concluded that compared to other states, North Carolina is well-prepared to avoid drastic increases in employer contributions. Folwell also added that since 2017, the department has reduced Wall Street fees by $253 million. But the disparity in percentage growth between the indices and the pension fund has Folwell's critics scratching their heads. They contend that if the pension fund had performed the same as the S&P last year, 900,000 North Carolinians would have had an additional $10 billion plus in their pension kitty. Little more than 30% of North Carolina's pension money is tied to public equities, far below the maximum threshold of 65% set by state lawmakers. Folwell says he's satisfied with the performance last year, adding his responsibility was to make sure the department has the fiscal ability to pay $6.5 billion in benefits to plan holders. Right now, we have fewer people paying into the system than getting benefits, he says. Think about it. We pay more in benefits every year than North Carolina's total debt of $5 billion. Folwell acknowledges the plan is on the conservative side. Perhaps that's why Moody's ranked us number one in the country in terms of meeting funding levels of the plan in the future, he says. A deeper dive into the portfolio shows the stock market provided the biggest returns, almost 28%, in line with the gains of the broader indices. In contrast, the other baskets of the portfolio, such as fixed income, returned about 10% during the year, performing far below broader market returns. Frequent listeners to this program will know that there's almost always an executive voice column in the paper in which an executive from around the Triangle is described. And this week, of course, is no exception. And our executive voice this week belongs to Carrie Stoltz. For Carrie Stoltz, Triangle market leader for Bank of America, the key to winning business is community. And competition, including that of J.P. Morgan Chase, which is eyeing the region for several new branches, can be positive. It makes everybody better, Stoltz says. In an exclusive interview, Stoltz explains how she believes her bank will see continued growth in the region, which includes a new financial center in Wake Forest and a growing digital footprint. Stoltz rose in the ranks through acquisitions. She started in consumer banking, with her first branch being in Cherryville in the western part of the state. Through the bank's commercial banking training program, Stoltz became a commercial lender in Greensboro, only to move back to the Triangle to start the business banking unit in Chapel Hill. She returned to her hometown of Raleigh in 1996 and became market president in 2009, right in the very bottom of the market. Stoltz says Raleigh is home. They appreciate my connection to this community, that I'm involved, that I'm engaged, she says of her employer. I've been continually challenged. And working in the place where she came from adds pressure that Stoltz says makes her better at her job. And it makes me feel good to do something for the community I grew up in, she says. That connection to the community also gives her an advantage, Stoltz says, particularly in an era where many people don't trust big banks. We've worked really hard to establish credibility, but there's always some skepticism, she admits. So we have to work even harder to make sure that we're clear and good at communicating and demonstrating that people trust us and what we're saying. You want to make sure that people trust you? Trust is a big part of the relationship. Stoltz, like many others in her industry, believes the future is digital. Banks today look nothing like they will in future decades. As a case in point, she notes a fourth quarter statistic from last year where the total number of mobile deposits made in Bank of America's system were the equivalent of 2,370 financial centers. That really speaks to the power of digital banking and what it's become, she says. No longer does a bank's financial advice come out of a branch, Stoltz says, pointing to a new artificial intelligence initiative, Erica, the bank's answer to Amazon's Alexa. Erica, she explains, can tell you how much you've spent at restaurants for the last year. And as its customers make budgeting decisions based on Erica's intelligence, the bank, too, is benefiting from increased engagement. We can get real-time feedback, Stoltz says. But an increasingly digital bank also comes with cybersecurity concerns. She says that's a challenge her bank, with its balance sheet, can tackle. We're going to spend everything we can to protect our clients, Stoltz says. She receives regular briefings on any issue thought to impact the Triangle, Stoltz says, calling the bank's security team incredible. She also gets feedback from the top, specifically CEO Brian Moynihan, who she calls approachable. Stoltz meets with Moynihan and the executive team twice a year. And once a year, all the market presidents meet to talk about what's happening around the company. In the Triangle, she's also been hiring. Several business lines are represented at the Triangle operation in North Hills, including global human resources for both commercial banking and business banking. Talent acquisition, always a challenge, is easier in light of new bank benefits, just such as the firm's decision to raise its minimum starting wage to $20 and its generous shared success bonus policy. We're trying to do things that show people that we care about the employees that work here, Stoltz says. It's a tight labor market. We have to do everything we can to make sure we are investing in our existing employees. The regional demographics help with talent acquisition, she says. People are moving here every minute, Stoltz says. That also means new customers. Her key to keeping and reeling in new customers? Listening, she says. Being local to Raleigh also helps her in a strategy the bank as a whole is pushing in 2020. Listening. At the end of the day, you can have all the best resources and technologies, Stoltz explains, but if you're not listening to what people are telling you and reacting to that and doing something about it, you're never going to make a difference. Now, frequent listeners to this program probably know that there's always a cover story from the Triangle Business Journal. This week marks a departure from that. And rather than having a cover story, we have a salute to the 2020 healthcare heroes. And this particular competition is sponsored by First Citizens Bank. So just a brief word from Jay Irby, who's the Triangle Area Executive from the First Citizens Bank, about this. And then I'm going to read to you very short excerpts of these 23 individuals. Obviously, these are going to be very short excerpts, and I will be cheating you of all the wonderful stuff that's here about all these folks. But at least I can give you their names and what their awards are and where they're located and their chief responsibilities and what they enjoy most about what they do. So here we go. From Jay Irby. For the 14th consecutive year, First Citizens Bank is proud to serve as presenting sponsor for the Healthcare Heroes Award, which honors individuals and organizations that have made significant contributions to healthcare in our community. This award highlights the important contributions our hometown healthcare professionals are making, not only in the Triangle, but also throughout the state, the nation, and the world. So on behalf of all of us at First Citizens Bank, it's our privilege to showcase the achievements of the dedicated healthcare heroes in our community and call attention to the thoughtful and innovative care they provide each and every day. Congratulations to all our honorees. And our first honoree is Gail Harris, and her award is Lifetime Achievement. Gail Harris works for the Durham County Government. Now, what I'm going to read, common to all 23 of these, is their award and their name, where they work, and then these two parts. What are your chief responsibilities, and what do you enjoy most about what you do? So for Ms. Harris, what are your chief responsibilities? Answer, oversight of 5 departments and health and well-being strategic plan goals. Assure the public's health is protected and the community's health needs are identified and met. So what do you enjoy most about what you do? The cross-sector collaboration that led to outcomes that improved health-related issues in Durham County. And next, the winner for Allied Health Professional is Jennifer Beltran at Duke University Hospital. So what are your chief responsibilities? I'm a nurse and clinical lead in the Duke Birthing Center. I work with management on clinical and non-clinical issues, also caring for patients and families. So what do you enjoy most about what you do? I enjoy caring for new mothers and teaching them how to take care of their newborns. I also enjoy mentoring new nurses. And under the heading of nurse comes Kelly Capes at Duke Regional Hospital. What are your chief responsibilities? Translating evidence and research into nursing practice and improving quality care by mentoring nurses at the bedside. What do you enjoy most? Answer, collaborating and implementing changes that positively impact outcomes. And under the heading of community outreach, the winner is Amy Sipau, with apologies if I've mispronounced that, C-I-P-A-U. Amy works for the Lung Cancer Initiative of North Carolina. What are your chief responsibilities? Providing leadership and guidance to the board and staff, assisting in establishing vision and strategy, and building relationships with donors and sponsors. So what do you enjoy most? Working with lung cancer survivors, their loved ones, volunteers, and other advocates, seeing our progress and raising awareness and much-needed firms. And under the heading of Rising Star comes Catherine Coe with UNC Hospitals. So, chief responsibilities? Patient care, both in the hospital and outpatient settings, as well as medical student and resident teaching. What do you enjoy most about what you do? The opportunity to collaborate with amazing colleagues and to work on innovative projects that improve the way we care for patients and educate future physicians. And our next healthcare hero gets the Healthcare Manager Award, and she's Christy Dangerfield from UNC Healthcare. What are your chief responsibilities? I'm responsible for maintaining code carts, reviewing cardiac arrest events, and continuous process improvement around emergency events. So what do you enjoy most? Breaking down barriers and making things easier for staff. And under community outreach comes the Dementia Friendly Hospital Initiative at UNC Healthcare. This is a group of people. So what motivates you in your everyday work? Well, dementia-friendly training shines a light on a subject that's difficult for many families to discuss, but in need of urgent attention. What do you enjoy most about what you do? Well, better training leads to better care, which leads to better morale and a shared sense of expertise to meet patient needs. So it's a group of people. Under the heading of nurse comes Lisette Denis from Duke University Hospital. What are your chief responsibilities? Clinical quality oversight and the operations of the unit, ensuring that staffing resources and supplies and equipment are appropriate and available. And what do you enjoy most? I love mentoring and coaching others, helping others achieve their professional goals and develop their leadership skills is incredibly gratifying. I also enjoy project management. Next, under Healthcare Heroes, we find the heading of Medical Professional, and the winner there is Stuart Gold from UNC Chapel Hill. What are your chief responsibilities? Answer, taking care of pediatric hematology oncology, a fantastic group of 16 physicians, 13 nurse practitioners, 5 CRAs, 9 fellows, and 2 administrators. What do you enjoy most about what you do? Basically, everything I do, I love. Working with children and their families, helping develop early phase clinical trials at UNC has been very rewarding. Interacting with families, faculty, nurses, and staff is an exceptional part of my position. The more recent work in equity and inclusion has been extremely rewarding and an area in which I feel I've been able to be impactful. And from the heading of Innovator Researcher, the winner is Jeffrey Hathaway, and he works with Breakthrough Physical Therapy. Chief responsibilities. I oversee operations of our 20 clinics. Primarily, I make sure our people have the resources needed and move us forward by asking the right questions. So what do you enjoy most about what you do? The relationships we build as a team and community partner, plus being part of an innovative company that believes healthcare is local, which means we can work in each community uniquely versus a cookie-cutter model, have a team of people who are inspired and focused on being the best. Next on our list of healthcare heroes is Andrea Hayes Jordan. Hayes Jordan is a physician with the University of North Carolina School of Medicine, Children's Hospital. So what are your chief responsibilities? Wife and mother, surgeon and chief of pediatric surgery at UNC, division chief of pediatric surgery at UNC. What do you enjoy most about what you do? As a pediatric cancer provider, saving one child's life not only saves that child, but generations of children and the people they are connected to. And under the heading of Support Services Executive, the winner is Logan Jones with UNC Rex Healthcare. When asked what his chief responsibilities are, Jones answers, direct the work and ministry of the Pastoral Care Services Department to ensure the 24/7 care of souls of patients, families, and coworkers. What do you enjoy most about what you do? I love teaching the art of pastoral care. It's a privilege to listen to the stories of people's lives, their hope and fears, their pain and joy, their laughter and tears. And under the heading of Support Services Executive, the winner is Andrew Herrera, who is with Cure Americas Global. chief responsibilities. Day to day, I'm responsible for business development, strategy, and oversight of the staff. I create new partnerships and provide staff resources they need. What do you enjoy most? I enjoy the people I work with, the supporters I engage with, and the fulfillment that comes from making people healthier. And under the heading of healthcare manager is April Lumiere at UNC Ricks Healthcare. What are your chief responsibilities? Oversight and leadership of UNC's Ricks Women's Center, OB Emergency Department, Labor and Delivery, Postpartum, and Neonatal Intensive Care Units. What do you enjoy most about what you do? Building relationships, advocating for our patients and my team, and the ability to be creative and innovative in finding solutions. Next under the healthcare heroes comes the allied health professional, and the winner there is Mallory McKeown at Wake Med. What are your chief responsibilities? My role in our team is to support the families in the Children's Hospital through advocating for them, connecting them to services, or serving a meal. What do you enjoy most about what you do? Helping people. Sounds very cliche, but it's the truth. Being able to connect someone to a resource, fetching water, or getting a question answered, it brings me great joy to have made someone's day easier. Under the heading of innovator and researcher, the winner there is Leslie McKinney, who's with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina. What are your chief responsibilities? Responsible for leading the Blue Cross North Carolina Advanced Primary Care Team and our clinically led Blue Premier Value-Based Provider Engagement Team. What do you enjoy most? I work with innovative, passionate, hardworking people and teams every day who are focused on improving healthcare delivery, quality, and affordability. And under the heading of nurse comes the winner, Deborah Murphy from UNC Healthcare. Chief responsibilities, providing direct patient care, charge nurse for 3 units, educational presentations to patients and peers, chart audits, payroll, and scheduling. What do you enjoy most about what you do? There are so many things I like about my job, but one stands out. I really enjoy teaching a cooking group to children, adolescents, and young adults. Now, here's a volunteer group that's actually a group of people, the Patient and Family Advisory Council at Duke Raleigh Hospital. Their chief responsibilities is to give a voice to the patients and family members receiving care at Duke Raleigh Hospital with the goal of improving health care for all people. And what they enjoy most? Advisors enjoy the positive impact on patient care and patient satisfaction and the ripple effect that PFAC efforts have on improving patient outcomes and community health. Now, for a lack of time, I'm not going to be able to read similar parts for the rest of these folks. But under the heading of innovator researcher comes Vamsi Pamula from Babies, Inc. For physician, Mahesh Sharma at UNC Chapel Hill Medical Center. From dentist, Meenal Patel with Preston Dental Loft. For community outreach, Pete Tannenbaum with the Alliance Medical Ministry. Under nurse, Brenda Wilcox with Duke Raleigh Cancer Center. And finally, under the allied health professional field, Christina Wolf with Wake Med Outpatient Rehab and Physical Therapy. Quite a very impressive group of healthcare heroes. Now, from the viewpoint page of this week's journal comes the guest article written by John Hood. It's entitled, "It Should Be Easier to Work in North Carolina." North Carolina's unemployment rate averaged 3.9% during 2019. For economists, that rate signifies full employment. But that certainly doesn't mean all potential workers are employed. And it doesn't mean we couldn't adopt more policies to increase productive employment among North Carolinians. You might find it puzzling that any jobless rate above zero could constitute full employment. But keep in mind that even in the midst of a strong economy with a healthy labor market, there will always be people leaving and looking for jobs. Some will do so on their own initiative, seeking career advancement or relocating with a spouse, for example. Others will be fired or will lose their jobs because their employers contract, automate, or go out of business. Moreover, there are potential workers who lack jobs and aren't captured by the most familiar statistic. The rate I cited at the beginning of this article, and the one that makes headlines every month, is called the U3 rate. It measures how many people who are actively looking for work have yet to find a job. There are broader measures, however. Some people look for a job for a while, get frustrated, and stop looking. They're called discouraged workers. Others, known as marginally attached workers, aren't currently seeking work because they're doing something else, such as taking care of a loved one. Still others are employed part-time but would rather be working full-time, a status called underemployment. If we include discouraged, marginally attached, and underemployed workers, North Carolina's U6 unemployment rate averaged 7.3% last year. Don't panic. That's still undistinguishable from the national average. It's also a big improvement from a decade ago when North Carolina's U6 rate was a whopping 17.7%. Still, it signifies that a low headline rate by itself does not convey the full amount of slack in a labor market. It also doesn't tell us what percentage of full-time workers would rather be employed in a different occupation but can't for some reason. Other surveys and common sense would suggest that percentage is far from tiny. One reason some North Carolinians can't pursue the jobs they really want is that our state makes it prohibitively expensive to do so. We license dozens of occupations that could be the subject of voluntary certification or other procedures that provide potentially useful information to consumers without creating artificial barriers to entry. Most of the time, the reason a state such as North Carolina regulates a profession is that the members of the profession ask for it. Making it harder to enter the field, it tends to have the effect of reducing employment in that field, which translates into higher pay for the people already employed in it. When it comes to occupational licensing, some of the freest labor markets in the country are in blue states such as Minnesota and Vermont. Some of the most restrictive are red states such as Florida and Alabama. On this issue, North Carolina is again somewhere in the middle. Surely the Tar Heel State can do better than that. Finally, this week, we read the editor's notebook, which is entitled Cuts in NIH and Capital Access Would Paralyze the Area's Economy. Two things converged within 48 hours in the past week that got me thinking that sometimes one needs to look under the hood to see why our economy is purring. First, President Trump unveiled his budget that called for a 7% cut in funding for the National Institutes of Health. This is in direct contrast to the last $1.4 trillion spending bill Trump signed for fiscal 2020 that boosted NIH's budget to $41.46 billion. Also, the National Science Foundation budget is on the chopping block, with funding cuts of about 6% to $6.3 billion. Secondly, about 24 hours after the release of the budget, I was meeting with Hatteras Venture Partners' Bob Ingram, who is the former CEO of GlaxoSmithKline, currently sits on the boards of numerous local and national and international life sciences companies and consortiums. Ingram didn't talk about the budget, but he talked about the need of more life science venture capital players playing a bigger role in the triangle. The theme of both events revolve around access to capital. NIH funds research, and when that research shows promise, VC firms fund it to move the research forward. Not having access to that chunk of money could eventually destroy the science and commercialization ecosystem that was deftly managed and operated by scientists and administrators ever since the formation of RTP in the late 50s. In fiscal year 2019 alone, NIH reports giving North Carolina more than $1.58 billion through some 2,557 individual awards. Duke University was the largest recipient, according to the NIH database, bringing in 950 awards totaling more than $571 million. Close behind, UNC Chapel Hill secured 939 awards, totaling more than $509 million. Other local companies such as RTI, FHI, and Roe added another $200 million to the total. It's not just money and employment. It's the research happening in the labs of these institutions that allows hundreds of supporting businesses to employ thousands of workers around the Triangle. Most people in the Triangle who are reading this column right now can find a direct link to a local university, its vendors, its philanthropic partners, or any public-private ventures. We are that tied to those NIH dollars deep in our communities. But when Ingram talked about how his VC firm, with almost $600 million under management, is now the biggest life sciences VC firm in the state, the NIH issue and our scientists' struggle for access to capital provided a stark, ominous picture. Last week, Hatteras reviewed 700 pitches and invested in five. Sure, most of the science perhaps was not worth investing in, but what if there was someone else other than Hatteras who came to a different conclusion? Silicon Valley and Boston provide that diversity. We do not. And if the research out of universities faces cuts from the government, then that science needs another funding source. The end result? We'll lose those scientists to, yes, Silicon Valley, Boston, and San Diego. And if our research institutions start losing researchers and scientists, our entire life sciences ecosystem would show signs of stress, which would in turn cost jobs, erode the tax base, and affect economic development. What's worse is the number of U.S. biotech funding for startups is declining. During the last quarter, about 40 biotech startups received first-round funding. The same time a year ago, that number was close to 80. And in conclusion, the Business Survey Pulse question of this week is, Earth Fair's closing all of its stores. Do you shop there? 369 responses, 52% said yes, 48% said no. Well, that music means we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. If you have comments or questions, please call us, 919-832-5138. So long, till next time.